Vaydaber Hashem el Moshe leimor naso et rosh b'nei Gershon gam heim leveit avotam lemishpachotam. OU Israel presents
in. Welcome.
Shalom, and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky. And this show is for Parshat Naso, and also for Shavuot. Recording and first broadcast, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 29th of Iyar. That's Erev Rosh Chodesh Sivan. Tonight is Rosh Chodesh. Last night, we counted 44 in the Omer, which are 6 weeks and 2 days. That's in effect all day Thursday, and tonight, the eve of Rosh Chodesh Sivan, we'll be counting 45. So we're winding up, to 49 days, the 50th day uncounted, but the 50th day will be Shavuot, Amir Tzahashem. Have a lot of little things to get on the board. But before that, let us read Tehillim Kuf Kaf Aleph, Psalm 121. Shir Lama'alot, Esa Einai El Heharim, Me'ayin Yavo Ezri. Ezri Me'im Adonai, Osei Shamayim Va'aret. Al Yitain Lamot Raglecha, Al Yanum Shomerecha. Hine Lo Yanum V'lo Yishan, Shomer Yisrael. Adonai Shomerecha, Adonai Tzilecha, Al Yad Yiminecha. Yomam Hashemesh lo yakeka v'yoreach baloyla. Adonai yishmorcha mikol ra yishmor et nafshecha. Adonai yishmor tzeitecha uvoecha me'ata v'ad olam. Achenu kol beit Yisrael, hanetunim batzara uvashivya, ha'omidim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, ha'makom yorachem aleihem v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha u'me'afela l'ora, ומשיבוד לגאולה, השתה בעגלה ובזמן קריב, ונאמר אמן. Let's start with Erev Rosh Chodesh, which is now, today. There is a fairly well-known prayer, although I think more and more people will be finding out about it. It's called the Parents' Prayer, written by the Shlach HaKadosh. And he wrote it specifically to be recited on Erev Rosh Chodesh, Sivan, although he writes that it is a prayer that a parent can recite on behalf of his children any day of the year. So even if you don't get a hold of it in order to say it today, or you're not listening to this broadcast and you didn't know about it, don't worry about it. It's a nice prayer to say. He writes, it is particularly important to pray for good and upright children. While praying for this, one should also ask God to provide them with all their needs and to send them their life's mate. He writes, I believe the most appropriate time to recite this prayer is on Erev Rosh Chodesh Sivan, for Sivan is the month when God gave us his Torah and when we began to be called his children. Rather than recite the prayer or paraphrase it into English, I would recommend for anyone who does not have access to it, first of all, it's in this week's Torah Tidbits, the new edition. If you have access to the internet and you want to find it in Hebrew on our Torah Tidbits website, that would be www.ttidbits.com. Sorry. www.ttidbits.com. And on the Shavuot page is a link for the Shavuot handout supplement pullout section from the Torah Tidbits. And in there you will find many nice things, as well as this prayer of the Shlah. You could also look up in a Google search the Shlah's prayer for children, and you will find it in various different websites, and you might also find it in English if you need to. Okay, so that's item number one. Item number two is Rosh Chodesh Sivan is always one day in our fixed calendar, because Iyar has only 29 days. Whenever that happens, there's a one-day Rosh Chodesh. When a month has 30 days, there will be a two-day Rosh Chodesh following. That's the way it works. Rosh Chodesh Sivan is of special note. It's mentioned in the opening verses of the Torah reading of Shavuot morning from Parshat Yitro, Chapter 19, the book of Shemot, the book of Exodus, where it mentions that on Rosh Chodesh of the third month out of Egypt, which is Sivan, we arrived at Midbar Sinai in the Sinai wilderness at the foot of the mountain in order to prepare for a number of days later to receive the Torah. But the experience on that day of arrival, the feeling of national unity, ki'ish echad b'lev echad, like one person with one heart, is how the Torah describes it, to the point where in the Dayenu song at the Seder, we sing, even had you brought us to Har Sinai, to Mount Sinai, and not given us the Torah, we would have sufficient cause to say thank you. The obvious question is, if the purpose of being brought to Har Sinai was to receive the Torah, how can we say that there is sufficient cause to say thank you had we not received the Torah? The answer that's given is that the experience felt by the people has never been matched since, and it was a very special high point of a shared destiny, which we are inspired by, if not able to actually reach it. That's Rosh Chodesh Sivan. Shabbat is Parshat Noso, as I mentioned before, and as we read the opening psukim at the beginning of the show, usually Noso is after Shavuot. This year it's before. It's a 10.5% occurrence in Chutz La'aretz, outside of Israel. In Israel, it's a 20.5% occurrence. That extra 10% happens in years that have 13 months, that Pesach is on Shabbat. Then we in Israel go ahead 1 week in Parshat HaShavua, while the rest of the world is celebrating their eighth day of Pesach. That puts us out of sync in Parshat HaShavua, and the first opportunity to get back into sync is Parshat Matot Maaseh, which we split, and outside of Israel is read combined, as it usually is. And that means that coming to Shavuot, we will read Naso before Shavuot. In Chutz La'aretz, it'll be Bamidbar. They will read Naso right after Shavuot, and here we'll already be reading the next reading of Be'alotcha. That's not this year's situation. This year is a 13-month year that began on a Thursday with Rosh Hashanah, and in that situation, which amounts to a little over 10% of the time, Naso precedes Shavuot. So that's some of the little things that I wanted to mention. We really should spend a little bit of time talking about Parshat Naso. It happens to be the longest sedra in number of psukim, 176 psukim. There's a well-known observation about the number 176, which is 22 times 8. That's significant because 22 is the number of letters in the Hebrew alphabet, and 8 is a one step beyond nature kind of number, and there's a sort of fullness that is implied in something having 176 verses. So Parshat Naso, the largest Torah portion, has 176 verses. Tehillim, Psalm 119, has 176 verses. And Masechet Bava Batra, one of the volumes of the Talmud, has 176 double pages, and that is the longest of any volume in the in Shisha Sidre Mishnah and Shas, in the whole Talmud. So the number 176 creeps up, at least crops up, I shouldn't say creeps up, crops up in those three instances. Naso itself begins as a continuation of Bamidbar, where the description of procedure in the wilderness, even though the decree to wander for 40 years has not come yet, the sin of the spies has not happened yet at this point, there is a marching order, there's an encampment order, 12 tribes, 3 tribes each in the 4 directions, north, south, east, and west, with the Mishkan in the middle, families of Levium, and Moshe and Aharon and his family, around, also in the 4 directions, in the inner circle around the Mishkan, the focus being the Mishkan, the encampment of God, so to speak, in the center, with these 2 major concentric circles, we'll say, radiating from it. I'm doing this sort of briefly, just as an overview. We have an interesting little portion after all of the technicalities of the Levium and their duties are outlined. We have the command, basically, to verbally confess one's sins, not to any person, but to God, in addition to a whole process of repentance, which is mostly nonverbal. It's in your heart, it's in your actions and your resolution, but a component of the tshuva process is verbal confession called vidui, and the source of that is the vidui that is commanded to be said accompanying certain sacrifices in the Mishkan, in the Mikdash, in the temple. But it applies even not in the context of a sacrifice. That's part of our process. Yom Kippur is the big day of the year for vidui, but vidui is appropriate all year round as well, as of course is repentance. After that, you have a long portion about the sota, the wife whom her husband suspects of infidelity and warns her in front of witnesses not to be seen in the company of a certain man. She is seen in his company, and the suspicions are eating away at the marital harmony, and the Torah provides for the man to take his wife to the Beit HaMikdash, to the Holy Temple, and a long procedure with different stages of handling this issue of sota, with the goal of getting rid of the suspicion, if she is truly innocent, having her admit infidelity if she's not innocent. And without going into further details, there is one startling passage where a potion is prepared for the woman to drink under certain circumstances, accompanied by an oath that she takes. And that potion includes taking a parchment, writing in a water-soluble ink the portion from the Torah about this topic, sota, and then dissolving it in the water. Whatever other ingredients, not the point now. The point is that God, in essence, is commanding that His name, which we're not allowed to erase, be written and purposely erased with the ultimate goal of removing the cloud of suspicion and increasing harmony between husband and wife. It's a lot more complicated than that, but let's leave it at that. This is followed by the portion of Nazir, a Nazirite, a person who takes a vow of special kind of abstinence, not allowed to drink wine, eat grapes, or any product of the grape, not allowed to cut his hair, not allowed to become ritually defiled from contact with a dead body. Whole various procedures, usually it's a month-long period. It seems, from the way this is treated in Talmudic literature, that a person sometimes feels a need to take on these extra measures in order to straighten himself out. It does imply or infer that there is some kind of problem that the person is having, and the regular regulations and rules of Judaism are not satisfactorily reining him in, and this vow hopefully will, with its extreme kind of abstinence, straighten the person out. Again, not doing justice to the topic, but that's the topic of Nazir, and it's located in Parshat Naso. This is followed by a short passage, but a very, very special one, where God commands Kohanim to daily bless the people, and through their blessing, God will bless the people. It's not the Kohen himself who's giving the blessing. He is a conduit for the blessing from God, the famous threefold blessing of Yivarechecha Hashem v'yishmerecha. Interestingly, let's leave it like that. In Israel, Birchat Kohanim is done every day, twice on Shabbat, in many shuls, three times on Yom Kippur. Outside of Israel, in most communities, it is done only on holidays, not on regular Shabbat, and certainly not during the week. And one of the explanations given for this strange phenomenon that a Torah mitzvah, which is supposed to be carried out every day, which is not restricted only to the land of Israel, is actually not practiced all that often in Chutz La'aretz, outside of Israel. The two components of this mitzvah, which is rare, if not unique, to them, is that a Kohen, in order to serve properly as this conduit for God's blessing, must be in a state of joy and must have a feeling of love towards his fellow Jews. That is not easy to happen, and it was deemed very difficult to happen on a day-to-day basis outside of Israel. And in Israel, the attitude was that the sanctity of the country imbues all of us with the ability to step up beyond the day-to-day mundane things that make a person less than joyful, that make a person less than in love with his fellow Jews, and to be able to transcend that. And the custom follows the requirement of Birchat Kohanim to be said daily. It's a very, very special bracha, so special that fathers and mothers and grandfathers and grandmothers, as the family customs differ, use that as part of their blessing for their children every week on Friday night. It's a borrowing from the Kohanim, I imagine with permission, because we all do it. And it's a very, very special thing. I had an opportunity a number of months ago to speak to a group of Protestant pastors from different denominations, I think, who came from Canada on a visit to Israel. And I met with them on Friday night, and we sort of went through all of Friday night from a religious Jewish point of view. And several of them came up to me afterwards and said, you know what impressed me most? You know what affected me most? You know what I paid more attention to? When you blessed your children and grandchildren. So it's a very, very special thing, and it comes from Parshat Naso. This is followed by the long chapter, the longest chapter in the Torah, chapter 7 of Bamidbar, 89 verses, in which the Torah tells us of the gifts to the dedication of the Mishkan of the Nesiim day by day for the 12 days of dedication. That's pretty much an overview of Parshat Naso, and we should really switch over and have the rest of the show about Shavuot. I would like to start with a song. You might have noticed that I put the music back into the beginning of the show. Eitz Chaim Hi is sort of my theme song, and it talks about the Torah being a living tree for those who hold on to it, and this, of course, is specially appropriate as we approach Shavuot, Zman Matan Torateinu, the time of receiving of our Torah. I would like to play a track which I've played in the past called Yehei Ra'ava Kodamach. It is in Aramaic. It comes from the end of the passage Brich Shmei that is said, borrowing it from the Zohar. It is said when we take out the Torah scrolls. And in English, that last piece, which is the words for the song, is, may it be your will, God, to open my heart to the Torah, and to fulfill the wishes of my heart, and the hearts of all your people, Israel, for good, for life, and for peace. It is a prayer that is said all the time, and again, a special focus in the pre-Shavuot season, because we're asking God to help us become very receptive to the words of Torah, the teachings of Torah, the practice of Torah, and at the same time, if we achieve that, we should also be able to have God help us with our heart's desires. Yehei Ra'ava Kodamach. We'll play the song at the beginning of the second half of the show. You are listening to Torah Tidbits Audio for Parshat Naso. The next portion of the show will be for Shavuot, which is next Wednesday. And since our next show, Amir Tzeshem, will be Thursday, now is the time for me to talk about Shavuot. Before that, as promised, Yehei Ra'ava Kadamach.
Hey, love, come on.
Okay, let's settle into Shavuot. First of all, the name of the holiday. Shavuot means weeks. It's a reference to the 7 weeks, which we started counting at the second day of Pesach. 49 days, 7 full weeks of 7 days each. The number 7 is significant there. And one more. The one more is the 50th day. The one more after 7 is 8, and 8 has, as I mentioned earlier, the Me'al Lateva, beyond nature. 7 is the natural number, 7 days of the week, 7 years of a Shemitah cycle, 7 species, nature, and 8, the 8th day, Brit Milah, circumcision, the 8 days of Hanukkah, and the 8th day of Sukkot, Shmini Atzeret, and the 8th sort of day of Pesach, although it's not an 8 following 1 7, it's an 8 following 7 sevens, also known as the 50th. Sorry to confuse people by saying it that way. And Torah is that which carries beyond nature with its own above nature characteristics. So that's Shavuot. What also comes out of that name is that it's not a totally standalone holiday. It is the culmination of Pesach, and we'll see that in a few more very significant ways. but it's important to keep in mind. There's a play on words, Shavuot, pronounced a little differently, Shivuot, with a shva under the shin instead of a komatz, is the plural not of Shavua, weeks, but of Shivua, which means an oath. The plural of oath, oaths, refers to the mutual oaths taken, the vows taken, so to speak, on this occasion of what some people call the marriage between God and the people of Israel, with the Torah as the ketuvah, the marriage document. And that vow by God is, I will make you unto me a mamlechet kohanim and a goy kadosh, a holy nation. And our oath of na'aseh v'nishma, all that God says we will do, and then we will try to understand. Many meanings of na'aseh v'nishma, but it's certainly a very special kind of pledge which we made to God. And therefore, as a play on words, shavuot, weeks, shivuot, vows, oaths, and both of those are components of this holiday of Shavuot. It has a couple of nicknames. It's called Chag HaKatzir, the festival of the cutting of the wheat, and Chag HaBikurim, or Yom HaBikurim. It's the beginning of the first fruits season, and that has a significance also, which I will tie in with Shavuot's role as the culmination of Pesach. And, of course, it's known as Zman Matan Toratenu, the time of the giving of the Torah. So Shavuot is many things, and its names reflect that. Before we get into some of that, it is very noteworthy that in one of the major presentations of the cycle of the festivals of the year, Shavuot has no name at all. It is called a chag, a holiday, a festival, that follows the sevens, the 49 days of the Omer. And that sort of takes away some of its independent identity as a holiday and focuses it as the culmination of Pesach. At the Seder table, the beginning of the process, we commemorate the Exodus from Egypt. Slave nation leaving in freedom by the hand of God. And much of what we say on Leil HaSeder, the Seder night, from the Haggadah, reflects that concept of the Exodus. Yet, we say certain things which go beyond just getting out of Egypt. For example, in the Dayenu song, which I referred to earlier, you have, at the beginning, Ilu Hotzianu Mimitzrayim, had God taken us out of Egypt and not punished the Egyptians, we would have sufficient cause to be thankful. Had we not passed through the sea, we would still have sufficient cause to be thankful. Had God not taken care of us in the Midbar and provided our needs and gave us the mud and gave us Shabbat. And the song goes on well beyond the commemoration and celebration of the Exodus, and towards the end of the song, it's, had you just brought us to Har Sinai and not given us the Torah, Dayenu, we would have sufficient cause to thank you. And had you given us the Torah and not brought us into Eretz Yisrael, there would be sufficient cause to thank you. And had you not brought us into Eretz Yisrael, had you only brought us into Eretz Yisrael and not built the Beit HaMikdash, there would be sufficient cause to thank you. And then we say, Alachat kama v'kama, how much more so, tova kefula umuchupela tamokom aleinu, that God has showered us with great gifts, is that he did all of these things, from the taking us out of Egypt, to bringing us to Mount Sinai, to giving us the Torah, to bringing us into Eretz Yisrael, and building the Beit HaMikdash. Now, if the first part of that song reflects Pesach, and the crossing of the sea is associated with the end of Pesach, the seventh day, then towards the end of the Dayenu, we're already talking about two very, very major things in Jewish life, namely receiving the Torah and going into Eretz Yisrael. I have said many, many times on the show, written in Torah Tidbits, spoken, until some people don't even like to listen to me because I keep saying the same thing, that God's plan, God's reason for our existence as a nation was to take us out of Egypt, to give us the Torah on the way to Eretz Yisrael, where we would live a complete Torah life in the land which God chose to give us. There are so many verses in the Torah which say the same thing in different ways, and it is clear that this was God's plan, always was. We were the ones who messed up. We were the ones who delayed our going into Israel. We were the ones who messed up over the tenure of the first temple, which resulted in exile. And we were the ones who messed up in the lack of numbers returning for the second building of the Beit HaMikdash, and the time that we were here, even though it was a long period that the Beit HaMikdash stood, the exile that followed it, and the period without a Beit HaMikdash turns out to be much, much longer, and we're still in it, in the final stages, hopefully. The point is, tying it in with Shavuot, is that the Ilu Hotzianu Mi Mitzrayim, had God taken us out of Egypt, etc., etc., that's Pesach. The giving us, bringing us to Sinai and giving us the Torah is Shavuot, and taking us into Eretz Yisrael and building the Beit HaMikdash is also Shavuot. Shavuot, some people tend to see only Zman Matan Torateinu, the time of the receiving of the Torah, but it is more than that. It is also the holiday that celebrates coming into the land of Israel and living here a life of Torah. They go hand in hand, like body and soul. Now, that's also reflected in an interesting way at the Seder table. At the Seder table, the central text for the story of the Exodus is borrowed from the recitation of the Bikurim bringer to the Beit HaMikdash. He's the one who says, Yaakov Avinu, way back, ended up in Egypt with his family. They grew to a large nation. They were oppressed by the Egyptians. You heard God, you heard our screams and took the people out. And that's what we say and analyze and embellish and explain at the Seder table. But the Mishnah in Psachim that tells us how to conduct the Seder night says that you darshan, you analyze and explain from Arami Oved Avi Ad Sheyigmor Kol HaParsha Kula, until you complete that portion. That portion is completed not at the Seder table, but by the Bikurim bringer in the Beit HaMikdash. He's the one who says, Yaakov went down with a family, grew to a large multitude, were oppressed, God heard our voice, took us out of Egypt, and the Bikurim bringer goes that one step further, which the Mishnah originally wanted for Pesach night, and that is Vayivienu El HaMakom HaZeh, and you brought us to this land, to this place, and take a look, here are the fruits of the bounty, and I am offering them in the Beit HaMikdash. The Mishnah says that you darshan ad sheyigmor kol haparsha kula. Not until ad shegomer, until you finish, until you will finish sometime in the future. That part of the process, that completeness or completion of that which was begun on Seder night when we came out of Egypt, that completeness is the Torah and Eretz Yisrael. That completeness is symbolized, commemorated, and celebrated by Shavuot. That is Shavuot in its complete form. It is not just, and I'm certainly not minimizing that. It is not just the time of the receiving of the Torah. It is the time that we came into Eretz Yisrael. Otherwise, Chag HaKatzir has no meaning, and otherwise, Yom HaBikurim has no meaning. Shavuot's full meaning is Torah in Eretz Yisrael. It is well known that Shavuot does not have the mitzvot that other holidays do. Not Rosh Hashanah with its shofar, not even Yom Kippur with its fasting. I don't know if you could say it like that. Sukkah certainly has, Sukkot has the sukkah, has the four species. Pesach has matzah and the Seder plate and all of that. Shavuot, it is explained, has Torah. Does not need any other mitzvah that ties us in to the events of the day. If it commemorates the receiving of the Torah, then the Torah itself serves that. And it shows up in the custom that many people have of staying up all night, the first night of Shavuot, the night of Shavuot from an Israeli perspective, and studying Torah. And there are many other customs that developed about Shavuot, not like the mitzvot that are obligatory on the other holidays, but nonetheless, those customs that very much typify the way Shavuot is celebrated. For example, there's a custom of decorating the shul and one's home with greenery, branches, leaves. Some people use flowers. And one of the reasons for this that's given is that it is recorded in Midrash that Har Sinai, generally a barren hill mount in the Sinai wilderness, was miraculously sprouted verdant greens and all kind of vegetation for the event of the receiving of the Torah, and we commemorate that by decorating our Beit Knesset, and it then went into the home as well with greenery. Another explanation for greenery is that the association with Bikurim and the baskets that one brought his first fruits were decorated with all kind of things, and perhaps that also inputted into this, and there are a few other reasons as well. Dairy dishes. To eat dairy on Shavuot is also a well-established custom. There are many, many reasons given for that. Don't have time to go into them now, but interesting that there is a sort of a clash between eating dairy foods on Shavuot and treating it also like a Yom Tov, a festival, where traditionally meat meals are the ones that are served. And therefore, some people split the time, and at night they have a dairy meal, and in the daytime they have a meat meal, or vice versa. Some suffice a breakfast when they come home from shul on Shavuot morning with dairy, and then a little bit later, they'll have regular lunch with meat. We at the Israel Center do something which I introduced a couple of years ago, because I personally believe that it is the original custom, and that is at the night of Shavuot, when we come here before we stay up the rest of the night to learn Torah, we have a festive meal which begins with Kiddush, Hamotzi, and a light dairy meal consisting of the traditional cheese blintz, little sour cream mixed with honey if a person wants to, because that also is a custom of Shavuot night, and a little dessert, and we say Birkat HaMazon. Then we have a small shiur, 20 minutes to a half an hour, and in the meantime the tables have been changed, the tablecloths, the cutlery are all different, and we sit down to another meal, or another part of a meal, this time a fleishik meal, a meaty meal, in honor of Yom Tov. The adherence to the strict separation of milk and meat is part of the reason that we have this. It sort of is a culinary example of our total commitment to Torah, not just the written word, because the written word says don't cook a goat in its mother's milk, but the whole body of oral law, both from the Torah's perspective as well as rabbinic tradition and law, is all part of that package deal, which is our commitment to Torah. not just to the Ten Commandments, not just to the five books of Moses, but the entire body of Torah Shebichtav and Torah Sheba'al Peh. Unfortunately, our time is out. I'm going to have to pull out a whole bunch of time anyway from this recording in order to fit the time constraints. So let me wish you a Shabbat Shalom, a Chag Sameach, Lehish Tameach.